Night gathers, and now our podcast begins. It shall not end until we're done talking. We are
the princes that were promised.
All right, hello, welcome. Welcome and hello. Hello, welcome to the princes that were promised. The watchers on the couch, and we are in craziest house ever right now. With dogs everywhere.
Dogs stealing water.
My stepson is watching. I think he's watching SpongeBob SquarePants movie. Lindsay sneaking around in the kitchen. Anyway, we're in season three, man. And this is just.
I already have a grain for the first episode. Don't even need to talk about it. I have a grade already for the first episode.
Let's go back and forth with numbers. Not even do the episode recap. Season three, coming off the really disappointing season two.
I want to say really disappointing. I think.
I don't know. You know what? I'm saying that because of the Blackwater episode, because it was really disappointing to watch. Well, no, you're right. It wasn't really disappointing.
It was not as good as season one.
Well, it wasn't as good as I remember it either, Blackwater.
We've probably been a little bit spoiled, making, you know, we have Battle of the Bastards on our mind. We have even, you know, the Battle of the Wall on our mind.
But there was something about Blackwater that just stuck with me.
And then you watch it again, it's like, wait a minute, why did I think that was
Even after seeing the Battle of the Bastards, I'm like, you know what, it just wasn't a Blackwater. But what was it about Blackwater that was so good? It's the writing, I guess. It had to be the writing, because it wasn't the effects. Watching it again, it's just not... It's not that exciting. The parts that were emotional highs were not... It just didn't do it for me that second time. So that leads us to season three. We were off air. You said that it was season three where the show kind of became...
The word of mouth really started...
Right, it became a weekly event for people.
Right. You start, you know, starting to co-workers, starting... Oh, you watch Game of Thrones, you're like, oh, yeah, it's a great show. Yeah, I can't wait for the new season.
I think season three, episode one, I watched with you, and this is the first one that I watched with
Pat and Michelle and Michelle's father.
Yeah.
So I was not right. When we saw the opening shot of Ghost coming in, I was going crazy.
You were going crazy, but you were excited.
I was excited. It was Ghost.
It was a nice save.
And like, that was like the opening scene of season one. Like, it's just, love Samuel Tarly and all, but there's no way Samuel Tarly is running for that distance and that speed. You know, there's just no way. In the snow like that. Like, we're not even talking like, low playing field. We're talking like foot of snow.
Yeah, he's not making that distance up. Although I didn't think he was in any danger as we end season two, which, as you know, we have the cliffhanger.
Right.
Sort of. I guess it's kind of a cliffhanger.
It's like they're right at the wall, and it seems, but now all of a sudden it's like still five seasons later, we're still waiting for them to get to the wall. It's like, what are they doing? They don't know the direction pretty well.
I don't know how many episodes you get the White Walkers encroaching on the wall.
They all seem like they're right there.
But I guess even the opening season, they're going back. Right? It's like, maybe all this is for them is like a big game of red light, green light, 1, 2, 3 or something like that. I don't know.
Who get their closest? It was an awesome opening scene. But I think the only thing that's keeping this episode above a 6, barely, is because of the opening scene and the last scene of the episode. Outside of that, I was heavily disappointed in this episode.
And this was a cold open.
Yes.
This was a cold open with the continuation.
Tully had one job. Mm-hmm. We gotta warn them.
He lost all the Ravens, right?
Yeah.
He loses all the Ravens. But Ghost saves Sam from some Whites. You don't see any of the White Walkers.
No, it's just the Whites.
Jon Snow meets Mance Rayder. I was excited about who they cast as Mance Rayder, but I was wholly disappointed from the moment I saw Mance Rayder. And it's not the way Ciaran Hinds played him. It was, I'm sure I mispronounced that name. It's the character that played Caesar in HBO's Rome. He did fine. It's just the character of Mance Rayder, they built him up to be this important character. And ultimately, what did he do? He didn't really do anything. Because this is the only conversation him and Jon have until season 5 when he's executed.
No, well, they're at the end of season 4.
Right, the wall episode. But it's implied that they have this unique kind of bond in A Storm of Swords. And it's totally lacking here in the show. But it's not that... It's just that relationship that's lacking. It's just any sort of relationship is lacking. I just don't see what the relationship is where it comes to the point where Jon feels pity for this man and he ends his life from being burned alive. Tormund, I think I enjoyed from the get-go. Mm-hmm. We have a Tyrion and Cersei scene, which also I didn't like, where Cersei's basically asking Tyrion, I know you're going to talk to Father. You have a meeting with Father. Are you going to tell father what I've been doing here. Stupid soap opera stuff.
Now, was that when Tyrion was in his little room?
Right, he was actually still scared that Cersei came to see him, so running at Bronn.
Right, right.
Tyrion does meet with Tywin, and he asks for Casterly Rock. And
Tywin's
like, no way.
That was a good scene.
That was a good scene.
There were three good scenes in this episode right now. That scene, the last scene, the opening scene. Outside of that, it was just like a whole big, hey, this is where our character is.
Oh, and Davos is still alive.
When I look back on that episode, like, when I first watched it, maybe I probably thought it was awesome, but I look back on it, particularly that middle section of the episode, and I just thought I was very disappointed.
Well, this is a catch-up episode. Yeah, what it is.
Right. I don't think the show realized it, that the show was really starting to become an event now. If you go back and tell Benioff and Weiss right now, to tell it, and look at that episode honestly and say, well, what do you think about that episode? Mm-hmm. I think they would say subpar catch-up episode.
I agree.
And I think they would do things differently, more exciting in that episode. Knowing full well, I think they're still kind of on the wire of the popularity of the show at that point.
Yeah, I want to agree with you that they would, but I think that there's a bigger problem for them here, and that is material that they're adapting and plotting through this, and especially those first three books. Game of Thrones, Clash of Kings, and Storm of Swords, people that read the books love, those three books are amazing to them. Feast for Crows, A Dance of Dragons, real fans love those books equally, but a lot of the people that were...
They say it's a drop-off.
Right. So they have to plod through all of this material and narratives that George wrote, and anything that differs at this point, anything that differs is a negative for them. You know, they can't do anything right if they differ from George. Mm-hmm. Whereas in later seasons, they can, and it's okay. When season 3 aired, I was George Martin's biggest fan. Now, as going into season 7, I fucking hate George Martin. He's the bane of my existence. So I want them to do better than George Martin, you know? Did I hear you correctly? You're going to go with a 6?
6.25.
All right.
6.25.
Going with the quarter points right off the bat.
Right off the bat. You know, you can't even get a full point out of this.
Yeah.
The ending scene, I like that scene with Barrett and Selmy.
Right.
I like that. Again, it's one of the saving parts of this episode. I just love his introduction to Danny. You know, I served your father on, King's, I like Jorah out there. Jorah's scared right now. It's like, oh no, what's Barrett and Selmy? Remember Robert Baratheon's King's Guard. He's trying to already plant the seed.
Robert Baratheon's.
Baratheon's King's Guard.
The guy that killed his brother.
Yeah.
That guy. I'm gonna be a little kinder. I'm gonna go 6.5, but since you're doing 6.25, I'll go 6.75. Basically for the same reasons. That opening scene, the Barristan Selmy scene, but mostly for the Tyrion Tywin scene. Mm-hmm. Which is just some great acting by a couple of great actors.
And it's the crux of the whole entire, relationship between Tyrion and Tywin is that whole entire, he wants Casterly Rock.
Which is going to play out over the next
it is his. I mean, I guess he can choose, but I guess it's the same thing that Randall Tarly did to Sam, pretty much. In a different way.
I mean, Lords, it's his by rights, but Lords, if they don't want to give it to their firstborn son, they're going to figure out a way not to.
Right.
All right.
So, episode 2, we have Dark Wings, Dark Words.
Dark Wings, Dark Words, and here we get the narrative moving along a little bit.
Don't we meet the Brotherhood Without Banners here?
Yes. So in Dark Wings, Dark Words, we have Sansa meets, we meet Lady Olenna Tyrell. Mm-hmm. We have Sansa and Lady Olenna, and she ends up telling them that King Joffrey is a monster. Mm-hmm. Joffrey asks Margaery about Renly and him being a gay, and
perversions.
Right. Tyrion is not as into Shay as he once was, it seems. We meet Oral, who's a warg.
Oh, yes.
So I guess it's taking the place of, not Varamyr Sixskins, there was another warg. It doesn't matter. They're marching towards the wall. Jorah Mormont orders Rast to ensure Sam reaches the wall alive.
I command you not to die.
Yeah.
Rast.
Yeah, he got his.
Yeah.
Bran has a dream. He sees a three-eyed raven. He's confronted by a boy who explains that it is impossible as Bran is the raven.
Jojen!
I don't know. How did you feel about Jojen's introduction to this series?
I can't stand this. One thing I always got nitpick, and it goes back to season 1, episode 1, with the direwolf scene, where we changed with Theon's lines a little bit there. Did they not change up Georgian saying he knew nothing of the war, other than Robert's rebellion.
It's possible.
I think they changed that up. There's something in some fashion, some way they changed that up. I just didn't like that.
Okay.
I don't like it when they get it, like, change, like, why?
Well, it turns out they have a reason for it, but.
But, like, it's so us in the books, it's because Brand doesn't know.
Right.
But, like, you kind of know that Jojen and Mira kind of know that Lyanna is John's mother. They don't let it on, but you kind of know it, you know, like, just like that line when they talk about Torrhen Harrenhal. So they know more than they're letting on.
Well, I feel like they're trying to make it seem as though Jojen does know a lot, but through magic, like communicating through dreams. And I didn't like that. So all the characters could have been served better by introducing them at Winterfell.
Right, yeah.
Season 2, it would have been a lot better.
At that point, did they still think they weren't going to get a season 3 maybe out of it? Maybe they think why introduce that? Then also, oh, we got season 3, we got to get some new characters. Oh, Mira and Jojen Reeves.
Yeah.
Jojen!
King in the North, Robb Stark, learns about the death of his grandfather, Lord Hos Tully. And Winterfell has been put to torch by the Iron Islanders. And Bran and Rickon were not found among the ruins of Winterfell. Arya, Gendry, Hot Pie are discovered by a small party led by Thoros of Myr, who suspects them of having escaped Harrenhal. He tells them he fights for the Brotherhood without banners. He takes them to get some food. As they're about to make their leave of Thoros of Myr, the Hound comes in and he recognizes Arya and tells Thoros who she is. And Thoros is like, well, we gotta take you with us. You're worth quite a bit of money. Did you like Thoros of Myr, played by Paul Kay?
Yeah, I didn't. I thought he was okay.
Yeah, no problem with him.
Yeah, I
don't love him, but.
Yeah, exactly. Like lukewarm water.
Yeah. Lukewarm water.
Where's the Derek Small's way of saying things? Derek, lukewarm water.
Brienne of Tarth, Sir Jaime, continue their journey to King's Landing. They encounter a farmer who warns them of danger in traveling on the King's Road.
Jaime warns, this is what Jaime kind of says.
Jaime tells Brienne the farmer must be killed. Brienne refuses. Later, they're traveling across a bridge. Jaime tries to attack Brienne, and this is the famous swords fight, which sounded so awesome in the book and was just not that awesome. This was really the only chance we had to see how great of a swordsman Jaime was,
right,
besides the fight with Ned. But
we still
at no point when Jaime had both hands did I think that he was that great of a swordsman in Game of Thrones. It's fine. I still like the character, but as his claim to fame, he didn't really push it all that much. But Locke and Bannerman of Lord Roose Bolton.
It's kind of like Jim Kelly. So far, he's Jim Kelly of
the Patriots. of Westeros.
Of Westeros. Get your 4 Super Bowls in a row. You don't want to start back. Can't win.
AFC Championship? No problem.
Super
Bowl? Yeah, you need somebody else. I didn't think that we were, but when we met this character, Locke, Bannerman of Roose Bolton, knew that we were not going to get the Brave Companions, who are one of my favorite sellsword groups. As horrible people as they are, those are just some characters that unfortunately have to get cut out due to time. So Dark Wings, I think, is a...
Well, let me ask you a question, sure. Just real quick. And this might go up kind of, I want to say, the Blood Raven, the DR Raven type thing. You look back on it now and say, you know what? I'd rather just made up a new character like Locke then call him Vargo Hoat and not really giving him the right storyline or proper writing.
Yeah, right.
So
yes.
You look back on it now.
Yes.
Rather get Locke, let them take parts from that and just own character.
And especially a character like that, because I know Vargo Hoat's not going to play a part in the end game. I mean, he's dead.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure some people on YouTube right now could probably come out here and tell me that
Brandon Stark is his father.
He's Jon Snow's father somehow, some way through
osmosis.
Maya Stone or something like that.
Actually, I heard that one, Brandon Stark and Maya Stone. Yeah, okay, especially a character like that who I know has no part in the end game, but it's just a really cool character I like. Yeah, I'd rather him not be in it than have him ruined.
Right, right.
Just trying to force him in.
Right.
Which I kind of feel is the deal with Jojen. I don't know. These guys are masters at cutting things out that they don't need. But I feel like in these early seasons, they included some stuff that they could have, that they didn't need.
Right.
And it affects the narrative. It affects the pace and the enjoyment of these early episodes. Oh, we also get meet Ramsay, but we don't know it's Ramsay.
Yeah.
He's helping Theon to escape.
Right.
He says, Yara sent him.
And is this the episode after this where he says, my real father was killed at King's Landing?
Which I believe it's the episode after this.
Once again, I give it a 6.0.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're less than the premiere, huh?
Yes.
I'm going to go better than the premiere. because things happened. But I could see your case for going lower also, because not much happened. Things happened, but
things
not
happened,
much.
But not much happened.
Not much happened.
We can't tell you what happened, but it happened.
Episode 3, Walk of Punishment. This one's written by Benioff and Weiss. An interesting note, it is directed by David Benioff. La-di-da.
One of the few episodes that I've actually directed, I believe. I think we ran over that the last time on his, on IMDb. There's been a couple episodes where they directed.
Tywin has a meeting with the small council. He wants to know about Jaime's location, and Varys is unable to provide this. He announces plans to have Baelish wed Lysa Arryn to deprive Robb Stark of more allies in the war. He names his son Tyrion, Peter Baelish's replacement as Master of Coin. Mm-hmm.
That's his way of getting Tyrion.
Right.
Because Tyrion wanted more. Right. Tyrion wanted, you know, kudos for what he did, and this was with Tywin's way of doing it.
And then we have this stupid scene, which it's funny, but it's just stupid, where Tyrion rewards Podrick Payne the services of three prostitutes, and they refuse payment because of Podrick's skill in lovemaking.
Yeah, okay.
Great.
Tyrion that discovers, will never, ever happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyrion discovers that Baelish has borrowed millions in gold from Tywin, as well as tens of millions from the Iron Bank of Braavos.
Yeah, that's a cool scene, because like, Tyrion's also like, so this guy really isn't our friend.
Mm-hmm. He starts to worry about these debts, even to his father. He knows his father's not going to forgive the debt, and the Iron Bank, you know how they are when you owe them money. Here is where Theon is freed by the cleaning boy, released from his bondage, given a horse. He rides east to meet his sister Yara at Deepwood Mott. He rides all night. He finds he's being pursued by captors. Moments later, he is caught, knocked off his horse, and this is where he almost gets raped, but then he gets saved by the cleaning boy. And he helps him out once again. And here you know something shady is going on.
Right.
I mean, you and I did, because we read the books. We know what happens to this poor bastard. But something shady is obviously going on, especially because the guy that was about to rape Theon, when the boy, who we know is Ramsay, goes to shoot him, he says something to the effect of...
He's like, you sick bastard.
Right. Like you lied to me.
Right.
Pretty much. I don't think Theon picks up on that, though. Maybe he does. He just has no choice.
Right, at that point.
I really don't like this part of Stannis' arc, where he's just totally disheveled and angry at everybody, which is he usually is, but he accuses Melisandre of trying to abandon him because she's going to the Riverlands to find Gendry. And so basically, what did you think of the Thoros of Myr, Melisandre, Red Priestess networking system?
Right,
which we don't have. We don't have that in...
It's kind of weird they did it then.
I
think the payoff will be coming in next season with them.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that Melisandre said to Arya.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people have suggested that, you know, she's predicting Arya's death. You know, which we do see that she says, all right, I see with this, you know, brown eyes, gray eyes, blue eyes. Obviously, that's the many-faced god, you know, the whole entire, you know, face changing thing going on with Arya.
Is that this episode that was the next episode that Melisandre catches up with him? I think it's the next episode. It's looking.
Yeah, we're a little ahead there.
But still, point being, it really moves the narrative forward, especially now in these later seasons, like you're saying. This is one of the things that they're going to be revisiting. I'm okay with it, I guess. At first I thought it was less because of
coming time at first, maybe?
Kind
of. You thought maybe this is just Pillman time. This is just something we need.
Right.
We need to...
Pillman on Hart Intercontinental title match.
Yeah. And for any of you who don't know,
what
I came up with the term Pillman time years ago, unfortunately, when Brian Pillman, the wrestler...
Jed, I must
say,
you come off like looking like gold on this podcast. Like between Sophie Turner, Carrie Fisher, and Brian Pillman...
Brian Pillman had a big angle against Stone Cold Steve Austin, and at the time they were going to each other's houses and doing all kinds of stuff.
That, like the gun scene.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it was leading up to this. Yeah. It was, you know, he had a gun, and at that point, I think Austin's beating the crap out of this guy.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way Austin's going to lose his match to Brian Pillman.
Right.
Next, you know, WWE, WWF, was postponing their pay-per-view. Or something. They were putting on garbage matches.
It was a Raw. They were
Are you sure it's Raw? I thought it was a, yeah. No, I thought it was a pay-per-view.
I don't know, man. I don't think that they, because somebody.
What died. Are the cases? No.
Somebody died during pay-per-view. And they didn't.
That was
stop.
Ron Hart.
They didn't stop the match. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, somebody's dying before Chris Benoit.
I have a feeling it was a pay-per-view, but regardless, if it wasn't a pay-per-view, it was a Raw, and like they were just put on these dumb matches. I thought it was a joke part of the whole entire angle. Like, oh, this is Pillman just.
He's not really dead.
Well, no, they didn't announce he was dead yet. Oh, they didn't announce he was dead yet.
Right.
But the match wasn't going on.
Right.
They just kept on putting these other matches on.
Right.
So I thought, oh, there's just Pillman trying to mind game with Steve Austin. Yeah. But then it turns out that Brian Pillman died. So,
it could have been a master mind game.
Exactly. So every time that there was always garbage matches, I say, well, it's Pillman time. Oh. They're just holding on to the available.
Yeah, you know what? I do notice that there's quite a bit of Pillman time in season two, season three. And that's what I kind of meant before with this story kind of just plotting forward, almost like careful steps. But
and I really get that in season three so much because I just really think they were just writing just to get to the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
Like they just felt like, oh, we have it, oh, we have which it, is, scene, which, we have it.
Which is exactly what we're saying about season two and the Blackwater, just writing to get to
the Blackwater.
Yeah. And I think it's a bigger picture then, which I want to talk about that when we get to the epilogue, when we're done talking about the shows, but maybe it's more that Benioff and Weiss's hands were tied, less so than they just wanted to get to these episodes and were just kind of in a flight pattern around the tarmac, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, I can definitely see a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. You know, they said that when they read the Red Wedding, we can make a show out of this.
Yeah, I mean, you really
they're excited.
This is an awesome TV show. With the Red Priest networking system, I think it also had to do with Gendry taking the place of Edric Storm.
Right.
So you had to connect them and get Gendry from the Riverlands to a place where Davos could save him and thus change Stannis' direction. You understand what I'm saying?
Right. They had to give that supply to someone.
In Astapor, Jorah Mormont, Sir Barristan Selmy offered Daenerys Targaryen their differing counsel over the choice of soldiers to use upon their return to Westeros. So Barristan doesn't want to use the Unsullied. Sir Jorah wants to use the Unsullied.
Right. Now this is probably the episode where Dany is talking to Barristan about Rhaegar. Did you know my brother? Finest man I've ever known. When your brother led the war in the Trident, they fought for him because
they were slaves,
right?
They believed in them.
They believed them. They loved them. Mm-hmm. And then Jorah comes with the line. And again, why did the show? They always got to do this. Almost every awesome line they cut short. The line goes: Rhaegar fought.
Oh,
honestly, honorably,
fought honorably, Rhaegar fought nobly.
They only did two of those. Like, why, what was so hard of putting nobly in there, or whatever word they?
Oh, much like in. The Tower of Joy with Arthur Dayne and Ned and changing up that dialogue.
That you may see a little bit of it was so long they couldn't do me a page and a half.
Yeah.
I wish I could sing. Yeah. Not that I loved it, but I mean, it was just one word or two words, whatever it was, three words.
Yeah.
Ian Glen cannot say
one. Ian Glen's actually getting paid by the word. So
we had to cut his words down.
Yeah.
That's why instead of saying, because they say, he's just going to give you a look.
Yeah. Because he doesn't call Daenerys Targaryen, he just does Khaleesi, because less syllables.
Right, that's right.
You know, season three it became syllables.
Go ahead, expression.
By season seven, he's just like,
And I like that, and I like the acting there when Jorah does say that, Barristan kind of looks at him like...
You fell for the other side, asshole.
Be careful when you say that.
Right, yeah.
Okay, just be careful.
Okay there, Bannerman to Ned Stark.
Okay, that's twice I've warned you.
Mance Rayder arrives at the Fist of the First Men to find a field of decapitated horses arranged.
And that was like one of the big scenes in the trailer was that scene in that, you know, I'm going to fight the biggest fire that North's ever seen. And when they put it in the show itself,
not even that,
the way you said it came out actually in the episode itself. I don't know. It sounded flat.
Right.
Like the actor, again, you said before, he had no charisma for that role. I think Mance Rayder has a little bit more charisma. His name is.
Yeah.
Very dry.
He's a king, and it's not a king by birth. This is a king who was decided to be king. I wouldn't vote for this guy for king. And as far as Ciaran Hines, I think this is maybe another case similar to our friend from the Hound episode of season six. Our friend, from.
Right,
the cowboy show.
Yeah, Deadwood.
Deadwood, right.
Yeah.
This is a death town. Our friend from Deadwood, who is not familiar with the material, is just looking for a paycheck, and he's just like, swords, dragons, whatever.
And maybe that's how Sarin Hines is playing it. I like to think not, but he just wasn't that great. But the writing for him wasn't that great either. So it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. Jon Snow notices there's no Night's Watch brothers among the dead horses, the dead decapitated horses. Jilly does give birth to a baby boy.
Right. And then we have the whole entire big ending scene with Jaime and the brother.
That right. Matters. Well, we also have Lost Lord Hospitality's ship burial where...
Oh, my God. Three arrows. Tully gonna Tully. Yeah.
Arya's pissed at Sandor Clegane for killing Micah. We do get Jaime losing his hand, which...
And the ending scene with Jaime, very good. For some reason, like, you know how I said to you once how I thought for a minute that they were going to kill off Oberyn the way they did in the books? For some reason, I thought they weren't going to chop off Jaime's hand.
Really?
For some reason, I was like, they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. They're not going to chop off his hand. I don't know what was going through my mind at the time I watched that episode.
Interesting.
And then all of a sudden, here, let me help you with that. All you have to do is say you're a daddy. Just calling your daddy helps everything.
Let's try something a little new with this episode. What's your big positive for the episode? That scene.
The only positive.
The Jaime scene.
I think it's the only positive.
I like the Edmure introduction too.
Tully. But that's why it works then.
Mm-hmm.
So this is definitely the episode where Rob yells at him because he attacked a mill.
Right.
That was a cool scene.
What's your big negative for this episode? Best scene, worst scene. So best scene is Jaime. What's your worst scene? I gotta go with Stannis. I have to go with Stannis. Because you talk about flight patterns. I'm gonna drop down below Velar Doharis. I'm gonna go 6.25.
I'm gonna give it a 6 only because of the last scene.
That's the only reason I'm giving them a 6.25. Yeah, although I do like the Edmure scene more than you do. I like the way they did River Run.
And now his watch has ended.
The title referring to good old Gior Mormont. Who was good.
Yeah.
I like that guy that played Gior Mormont.
I definitely like Gior Mormont.
Tyrion's plan detective looking for proof that Queen Cersei Lannister tried to have him killed. And Varys replies that he has none. And then he explains the story of how he was made a eunuch by a sorcerer. And then he's opening a box, and isn't the sorcerer in there?
Yeah, he's in there. I just been having this guy in my chambers for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Been feeding him, milkshakes.
Yeah, just, keeping him in this box.
What's in the box?
Maybe get some bullshit with Roz, who tells Varys that Peter Baelish may take Sansa with him.
Right, so now this is where we're getting Roz is in with Littlefinger's camp, because we had to pay Roz all this money to come back for some strange reason.
Jesus.
What a waste.
Yeah.
What a waste.
Varys meets with Lady Olenna Tyrell to discuss her interest in Sansa. The politicking is just not, that interesting. It's just not that good. Like, it's just like a bunch of, everybody's like a shell of themselves.
Well, I think in this case, I think especially with the Sansa thing, I think as the viewership, that's where it's going. It's a political game. There's no like, we're already watching this and we know that it's a trap. Like, this is going to be anything that's going to be done with Sansa is for someone's political game. So I think you start losing a little bit of the humanity and like, all right, because Varys wants to know what they're going to do and Littlefinger wants to know and Tyrell wants to know what, they're going to be able to do with her.
George can write these scenes and he can hint at an ulterior motive for Varys, a bigger picture. You can't really do that on TV. You know what I mean? You can't hint that...
Because they might be giving away too much. You can't... It's very subtle. Sometimes it's very subtle. You have to be very subtle with certain things. And there's cases where you just can't be... if you do something, it's going to come out obvious.
Marjorie's trying to get King Joffrey to get the people to love him. So he goes and he waves to the crowd, which angers Cersei. It's like, come on, man. She meets with Tywin to discuss the importance of getting Jaime back. Like, he doesn't know that? Okay.
Tell me something I don't know, Cersei.
And they start talking about Sansa wedding Sir Loras.
Mm-hmm. And she gets so high. Oh, God.
Bran has another dream. So he does his dream in sleep. And Rickon just sleeps. Chasing the three-eyed raven, climbs a tree in pursuit of the raven, but falls when he sees his mother, who commands him not to climb, which was not that good. Wasn't she like up in the tree?
What was with that? And that's a scene again where we see John and Rob with him, don't we? Back at, like,
yeah.
It's in a forest, but it's kind of like as if they were in the corridor.
And this is where Theon says, I had a father who's at our start.
Right.
And then he gets betrayed.
Oh, what are you taking me now?
Yeah. Lockes men taunt Sir Jaime for the removal of his sword hand. And Jaime falls from his horse. He steals one of Locke's swords and attacks him, but due to his weakened condition, having to use his left hand, he is quickly beaten. Jaime doesn't want to eat. He says he wants to die. Brienne chastises him for quitting.
All right, we went on to the...
Tells him to live so that he can have his revenge on Locke.
Mm-hmm. Like Brienne's trying to think, I tough. That's nothing's going to happen to her, but Jaime knows that she's in trouble. She's going to get raped.
We get a cliffhanger to Trial by Combat.
Right. We thought it was going to be the next week, and I don't think it's... It is, yeah, okay, it is going to be the next week.
Then we have the insurrection. Night's Watch insurrection at Crassus Keep. And Daenerys, this is a pretty cool scene, where she trades a dragon for 8,000 Unsullied.
Mm-hmm.
Then she starts speaking Valyrian and...
Right. Yeah, I did like that, because he's not even paying attention all of a sudden.
But that's straight out of the book.
Right.
Some of these scenes just go straight from the book, and you're going to nail them.
Well, it ends with Jaime getting his hand cut off.
It ends on an up note, Dracarys.
I'm going to give that a 7.25.
I'm going to give it a 7.5.
I really like that, the death of Jira.
All right, plus minus, what's your favorite scene, worst scene? Best scene, worst scene?
Varies with...
With the sorcerer.
The sorcerer.
Okay, that's the worst.
Yeah. I'm going to go with the Night's Watch scene there. Killing of the death of Jira Mormont.
I'm going to go with the Jaime Brienne scene. For me, in the books, that's when Jaime did a face turn for me in my heart. Mm-hmm. The best scene. And it worked pretty well on TV. Kissed by Fire, episode 5. And this is where we finally get Trial by Combat.
Yeah, it has to be.
But we meet Queen Selyse Baratheon. Talk about fucking... Cuckoo heads.
Yeah, she's like, she seems like a relative of the Tullys.
I'll tell you right off the bat, my least favorite scene is the babies in the jars. I don't. That's not who I want Stannis to be.
Were we aliens or something there? I'm sure Pat probably liked that scene. Pat was like, see, it was awesome, bro. Like, it's reminded me of freaking alien Prometheus, you know. Mark it down, that's gotta be up there. It just seems so out of place. For the show in itself. I don't know,
it's a certain level of evil right there. Littlefinger wouldn't do that. So Stannis is doing that? So you're telling me Stannis is a bad guy. We should have known what his fate would be after that scene. Trial by Combat, which I do remember enjoying that fight.
I thought it was a very good fight.
Yeah.
I loved Arya's reaction when Sandor killed
him. That was like all her revenge.
Yeah, you know? She thought for sure that Sandor was going to die.
And that's one of the best relationships in the series, is the Hound and Arya. Martin and Willem Lannister, who looks suspiciously like future Tommen Lannister. They're slain by Lord Rickard Karstark and his men. Karstark will be killed for treason. Tough call by Robb Stark was the right call. And he executes Rickard Karstark. But the Karstarks abandon the Northern Army. And Robb has to plan a strategy for continuing the war against the Lannisters.
He still thinks he's got a good one.
Mm-hmm. Now he's going to attack Casterly Rock. And to replace the lost Karstark forces, he intends to forge an alliance with Lord World of Frey. We already tried to do that. You had it. Locke delivers Jaime Lannister and Brienne of Tarth to Roose Bolton at Harrenhal.
This is where we have that pull of the bad scene.
Right.
Where so many people think of that if Jaime is Azor Ahai, this is the scene that he takes play with the prophecy. Because at that certain time, in the books, not in the show, but in the books... Orban Martell is entering King's Landing at the same time. So, just because he's entering at the same time,
Son.
700 miles away, that somehow it's connected to Jaime being Azor Ahai. I said before that if Jaime is Azor Ahai, I just can't buy that makes him Azor Ahai.
Right.
Something else would have to make him Azor Ahai. The fact that
he's not
the Martells are coming to King's Landing while he's in Harrenhal, he's not even there. I don't buy that.
If it's already happened, it's something subtle that happened like in Feast for Crows. It's not this. But this is that is a cool scene in the bath.
Kingslayer! I'm not a fan of Brienne either.
Yeah.
There's something about her that is...
Yeah.
She gets a big pub because she's in Star Wars. She's just like...
The worst.
For a minute... What? Like, yeah, I just... I'm not a big fan of... what is her name?
Shit.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
How did I know her name?
Captain Phasma. Oral prize for information about who's patrolling the wall. John says there are 1,000 men. Mm-hmm. Tony accepts his claim. But threatens to kill him if he lies. Cave sex. Jorah Mormont and Barristan Selmy are getting along, talking about the Siege of Pyke. Then Jorah pries into Barristan's motives for joining Daenerys'
class. Right, and then walking right in. That's actually an awesome scene.
Grey Worm is selected as the leader of the Unsullied. And some more bullshit. Cersei asking Baelish to rid King's Landing of the Thrells, whatever. Baelish learns that there's a plot to marry Sansa to Loras. He uses like an undercover gay guy to find this out. And so he comes up with a plan to help Sansa escape.
Now, is that the guy that The blonde hair guy that's also with Auburn the following year. Right. Like, yes. It's the same guy. Yeah. Oh god.
Yeah, he's like the gay Raz. Tywin finds out about the plot also and decides to marry Sansa to
Tyrion.
Yeah. And that's the episode. Not horrible. Not a horrible episode.
And they get married in that episode?
No. No, they don't get married until later on. But worst scene for me, obviously, like we said, it's Dragonstone
mm-hmm.
scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the best scene?
Tough one, I think.
Yeah.
They had the tough one out.
I really like the execution. I really like the trial by fire. I really like the bat scene.
Mm-hmm.
But then the King's Landing stuff is just a total downer. You're never firing on all cylinders in the season. You never have an episode where everything is like, all right, even if it's not great, where everything is at least good. I'm gonna go 7. I'll go 7.
I'm actually gonna go a little higher than you. I think there's a lot of good in that episode.
There was a lot of good, but there was equal amount of bad. So it's like
I'm gonna go 7.75.
Nice.
Gotta raise this bad boy up to a 6.35 average sooner or later.
Yeah, that's the high watermark. Season 3 so far.
Now the claw. This next episode is the one we gotta hear Baelish and his over.
Which I actually like that monologue, but it just didn't fit where he put it. That was the monologue he did that in the trailer.
Yeah.
But it doesn't fit
yeah.
in the show.
It would have been a good trailer thing.
Right.
Not in the show.
Mm-hmm. More discussions about Cersei marrying Loras or whatever.
She's not going to do it.
Marriage discussions.
She has a conversation with Tywin in this episode, I believe. She flips out on Tywin that she's not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're my daughter. You'll do whatever I command.
Cersei and Tyrion compare their impending marriages before Tyrion accuses his sister of trying to have him killed during the Battle of Blackwater. And Tyrion deduces that it was Joffrey who ordered Ser Mandon to kill him. Whatever. Lord Varys finds Lord Baelish in the throne room. Baelish tells Varys that he's
wearing Varys' ring. The ladder, plan builds, blah, 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 blah. This is now the same time where Jon and the wildlings are climbing up the wall.
Melisandre shows up and trades something, food for Gendry, I'm not mm-hmm. sure.
And this is where she has a conversation with Arya. I'm thinking back to that episode, I definitely could be wrong. Did Jon and the wildlings have gloves on? I'm telling you, there's a scene.
That's like such a gaping plot hole. They're clutching ice. Literal ice. A wall of ice. They have
I guess on. So. There is a scene, and I know I joked about it like a couple weeks ago, but there is a scene where it's like, dude, you're in the north, wear your gloves. And it's just like so, like, it's gotta be applied. First, you any kind of rough weather, you really need, in your climbing, you really need to wear gloves when you're going onto a rope. I don't know. I'm probably definitely wrong on that, but I think there's definitely a scene in one of these episodes where, like, it's, they're at the wall, or they're definitely up north of the wall, and they're like, look, Ma, no gloves.
They had to wear gloves, bro.
I'm gonna check it out right now. I'm probably dead wrong.
They have to be, dude. They have to be wearing gloves, please.
Well, they're wearing gloves. They are wearing gloves. It looks like it's a very thin coat of gloves, but they are wearing gloves.
Like, all right, Jon Snow, these are cold gloves. We only use them when we're climbing the wall.
There's like no way you can climb that wall like that. I'm sorry. It's just, that's steep.
Listen, man, where there's a will, there's a way. It's all about the climb.
There is a scene, I'm telling you, there is a scene where it's just like, okay, I think you need to wear gloves and there's just no gloves on. And as you saw up this, the trailer shot, not the trailer shot, but the pictures we were releasing last month, Sarah Clay ends up in the Northeast on no gloves on.
Rob meets with Lame Lothar Frey and Black Walder Frey to discuss a new alliance. And,
like the scene.
Needing a formal apology. Castle Baron Hall and Edmure Tully has to marry Rosalind Frey.
Edmure doesn't want to do it.
No, but Rob's like, you're doing it.
You have to do it.
Yeah.
You definitely have to do it. There's no way out of this now.
Poor Edmure. Rob's flipping around like making it like it's all Edmure's fault when in actuality it's all his fault.
Yeah, it's Rob's fault.
Rob
just like thinks that this is all he wants. Sure, I can apologize. Got my uncle right here. No doubt. Yeah.
I hope it's whatever I say, my uncle. Roosh and Jamie have dinner together.
This is another scene where people claim that Jamie's is Azor Ahai because they serve the ham goes in connection to the salted ham that was mentioned in season 2 between Renly and Stannis with Melisandre. If that is the case, and that is George's way of doing it too, then George is not a good enough writer that people give him credit for, because that really is just lame.
Yeah, but it's not the case, dude.
I'm gonna throw my mirrors off by throwing them curveballs.
Mirror Reed and Asha have a fight. Who cares? Georgian has a seizure, whatever.
Jojen waits and tells Brandy, so Jon Snow's surrounded by enemies. Mm-hmm. Where does Jojen get some kind of, where does he get this connection to Jon Snow?
That's a good question. Because also, too, we flash forward to when Locke dies. Jojen tells you, I see you being buried by the snows.
Right.
Meaning like, you know, Jon Snow. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just a way of them... The show trying to like
they're making it more magical than he actually is.
Yeah, like Jojen knows, so he has all these connections with Jon because Jon is. You know what's funny about? And I was thinking about this in the way in. They're a small house. The house words end seriously on. We swear by fire and ice.
Hmm.
Almost as if I think like Callan just threw that in there because we swear. You know, he almost like just like Eddard swears that oath to keep Jon.
Right.
Sacred because of what Lyanna did for him, that he's also now going to swear on fire and ice.
Right.
And that was the whole entire thing, was to give fire and ice together. I just thought that in a way. It's always been funny to me.
It's telling. It's definitely telling. Theon has a finger
taken off.
Yeah. It's flayed. Sam and Gilly camp during their journey to the wall. And Jon makes it to the top of the wall.
That's the ending scene.
That's the climb. A few okay scenes.
Mm-hmm.
This is really a setup episode. You know what, dude? Best scene was Rob and Lane Lothar Frey and Black Walder.
Mm-hmm.
Followed closely by Roose and Jamie's dinner. Worst scene I have to go to, I don't know, it doesn't matter, Tywin and Olenna or Sansa and Loras. Either way, they're both crap. 6.5.
I'm at 6.25.
Okay, The Bear and The Maiden Fair. This is George R. R. Martin's contribution for season 3. And might I say, the weakest contribution that he gives to Game of Thrones, easily.
Well, season 4, he did...
he does the Purple Wedding episode, which... I thought it was better than this one.
It's funny they didn't give him the Red Wedding, unless he didn't want it.
I think Benioff and Weiss just wanted that one. You know?
I guess so.
Yeah.
George, we got this one. All right, great. I'm just writing a book of wild cards right now. I don't care
about the story anyway. No.
The Red Wedding, what? I don't know. Does anything happen there?
Sansa's comforted by Lady Marjorie Tyrell because she heard about Sansa's betrayal of Tyrion. This is like the longest... Like, I remember the books, it's just like, all right, you're going to marry Sansa, and then they trick Sansa, just bring her down to the wedding. Like, how much better would that have been? But here you drag this thing out for like...
Right, they drag it out a couple episodes.
We have a nice scene with Tywin and Joffrey where Joffrey wants to be informed of what's going on. And he said that the throne, and Tywin slowly walks up. He's like, you want to be informed? Melisandre reveals to Gendry that his blood is noble. Gendry says, I'm just a bastard.
And that is the scene I'm talking to you about. That is the scene if I am Jack Dempsey. I would just be sitting there
Joe Dempsey, yep.
Joe Dempsey. Yeah. I'm not turned on enough right now. I think I need something more.
Okay.
I need a little more realism.
Cut.
I need some realism. Yeah. Carice, can you do a little more realism?
It's not real enough.
I'm not going to feel the emotional impact if I'm not having a stiffy down there.
Yeah. Can we get rid of these cameras too while we're at it? It's just a dry run. Jon Snow still with the Wilding Party led by Tormund, still continuing his journey south. Ygritte tells him he loves her, tells her she loves him, he tells her he loves her, whatever.
Was that big castle, Jon Snow?
Yeah. Theon gets freed by two young women who give him water to clean his wounds, and then they begin pleasuring him, and then he gets his pee-pee chopped off.
Right, yeah.
So
again, he falls for it again. Like, yeah. He really think, oh, Theon, like, wait, you really think at that point, now am I getting saved?
Yeah.
Gonna have some sex.
I think he knew he wasn't getting that. I think he knew Ramsay was up to something at that point, but I feel like this scene was put in as a definitive answer as to whether or not Theon lost his genitals, because you really were unsure as far as the Dance of Dragons goes.
Then they send it off to Pike.
Heading for the wall, Brandon speaks to Jojen while Asha and Hodor set up camp. So pretty much just the same scene done like 10 different ways throughout this season. King Robb is delayed in his march towards the Twins due to rain.
Mm-hmm.
Talisa Stark tells Robb she's pregnant. Oh, happy day.
Gonna put that as my least favorite scene of the episode. Just mark that down. There's something about it. I was just like, get on with it already.
Yeah. Arya escapes from the Brotherhood because she's pissed that they gave up Gendry. And the Hound captures her. Yunkai. And Daenerys tells George he will take the city to free his 200,000 slaves.
And this is where we meet Dario and the Horus.
And we also meet Qyburn in this episode, because he's traveling with Jaime, and Jaime
decides he has to go back and save Brienne from the bear.
No, we actually met Quiet Brennan before then.
Oh, he saved his hand, right?
We met him when Rob comes to Harrenhal.
Right.
You didn't realize that that's him.
Right. That's right. So yeah, I mean, this is the worst George R. R. Martin episode. It's really there's not a whole lot to it. I'm actually surprised that he wrote this. You know, maybe he did this when he thought he was gonna finish Lords of Winter and he was just trying to get it done with. Being that it's a George Martin episode, it's gonna lose points. Because it should be better.
The best scene in there is definitely the Jamie scene with that's by far the best scene in that.
It's not exciting. It's not like, you know. I'm gonna go back to 6.25. Sorry, George. Sorry.
I'll go with 6.50.
Okay.
Look, I do really like that Jamie scene.
Second Sons, episode eight. Tyrion and Sansa get married. Sansa embarrasses Tyrion by not bending down. He gets very drunk.
Right, he's told he's gotta consummate the marriage and he won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Joffrey's just loving it. He thinks it's great. I remember that.
Davos continues to learn to read in the dungeon. Davos objects to Melisandre's plan to sacrifice Gendry. Arya tries to kill the Hound while he's sleeping, but he reveals to be awake. Ser Jorah tells Daenerys that Yunkai has employed a mercenary group called the Second Sons, led by a man named Meereen. Daario, one of Meereen's lieutenants, takes his head and gives it as a gift to Daenerys. Sam kills a White Walker with Dragonglass, and they flee into the night, followed by a murder of crows.
What did you think about that with the crows? What did you think that signified?
Honestly, I thought Cold Hand is what I thought.
But it seemed like they were attacking Sam and Gilly, no?
Yeah.
So
at the time, I just thought Cold Hands. I didn't think it meant anything else. And now looking back, I don't think it means anything because we didn't see crows at Hardhome. We didn't see crows at wherever else, you know, at Three-Eyed Raven's cave, whatever the fuck it is. It looked real good, but I just thought Cold Hands. Yeah, real creepy. It was creepy. It was a scary scene. A real good scene. That's my best scene is that Sam scene because everything else is just, you know,
they just
talk about the flight pattern. It's a total flight pattern for brains.
I'm gonna go to 6.0.
You know what? I'm gonna go 6.0 also. I might go higher if I was a first Daario Naharis guy, but I'm a second Daario Naharis guy.
Really? You know what it is? It's not that like the first one better than the second one or the second one better than the first one. I just think, could you have got an actor who somewhat looked like the first guy?
Right.
I mean, it's so obvious.
And if not, could you
dye his hair or something?
Wig? Something?
No one's going to notice.
And here we go. The reigns of Castamere. And for a quick second before we get to what happens in this episode, I knew once I saw it, it was a top-notch episode. And though the actual Red Wedding wasn't what I imagined it would be, there's no way that it couldn't be a letdown from your own imagination of the Red Wedding.
I definitely thought it was going to be a much better hall than what it was in.
Right.
It's just like the way I always picture the Red Wedding. I mean, not that the Starks in the North had much of a chance, but where this was just like, you know, ripped behind them, cut, stabbed, boom, dead.
Right.
A complete bloodbath. What kind of makes this episode also is the stuff that happened before the Red Wedding.
That's what I'm saying, is everything is going well for our heroes this episode. Even Rob, until he gets to the wedding. Everything's going well for everyone.
My best chapters, the favorite chapters in the book, is the back-to-back chapter with Jon and Bran, where they're both there in that tower there, you know, that huge lake.
That's this episode, right?
Yeah. Direwolves come in, and they help Jon out. You know, Jon thinks it might be a Grey Worm at first, so did Rob come back? Obviously, it's different in the show a little bit. You know, Jon's same thing, he's going to try to execute that guy. Doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hodor's making a noise, and the warg hears something up there.
Right.
Bran, you have to do it, or they'll find us, they'll kill us. Hold on.
Right.
Puts him to sleep.
The Yunkai invasion with just the three guys. Yeah. I love that scene.
I like, you know, I really, you know, what I really like about Jorah Mormont is his fighting style. He's got like this, like, weird, like, I don't know, it's just like a weird fighting style.
Well, he's like straight up knight fighting style, but right. Like, you know.
You already saw that, you know, when he fought the Dothraki guy in season one. We saw it in season five when he's fighting in the pit. He has like this weird, little. I like that fighting style by him.
Did you think they did the Arya almost getting there in the nick of time?
Yeah.
Slash, good thing she didn't get there in the nick of time.
They show matching made it worse for her by letting her see Grey Worm dying. Right. And then the next episode, scene actually seeing Graham, you know, Graham's head on Rob, you know, just wakes up like, oh, did I miss anything? Oh my god.
I'm going to give the reigns of Castamir an 8.75.
I think that's what I was going to go with the two.
I wanted to go 9, but it just...
This thing holding it back that you can't go 9.
The build-up is holding it back. The rest of the season is holding it
back.
Yeah,
that's what I'm going to... You hate to say that. I can't give it a 9 because of what was leading up to it.
Right. That said, from here on out, it really opens up the series. And I think season 4, you get a much better, more consistent quality starting with season 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because you free up the whole Robb Stark storyline. Mice is the tenth episode, revolving around the aftermath of the Red Wedding. House Frey receives
River. Opening scene is awesome.
Oh, with Roose Bolton, yeah, I really like that scene. Roose Bolton's the new Warden of the North.
Good scene there between him and Walder Frey.
Mm-hmm.
Forever Young.
This is kind of a wrap-up episode, but yeah, it's a wrap-up episode.
Not that anything happens major in here. John gets back to the wall, and he escapes from, you know, the arrows. 3 hours instead of the 1 hour that was in the books, I believe. But it was only 1 hour, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
I know you love me. I love you.
Jaime, Brienne, Qyburn arrive at King's Landing.
Great scene there, too. I like that scene. When,
yeah.
I like the fact, like, no one's recognizing Jaime in King's Landing.
Yeah.
They think he's some, like, cripple.
Arya starts just killing Freys. The Blackfish has escaped.
Where's he gonna run to?
Bran meets Samwell. That's a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, awesome scene. You're Bran Stark. No, I'm not. Of course you are. I've been around ghosts long enough time to know a dialogue when I see one.
Regret shoots John with, like, what, 4 or 5 arrows?
It was three arrows. And, like, he comes back, they're all on his back. He comes back to the wall. He falls, like, flat backwards on his...
Onto the arrows.
Yeah. Onto the arrows. Yeah. At least on the side of it, at least.
Yara takes 50 Ironborn's best men and goes to save Theon.
And let me say that is one of the worst. That's my worst scene of this episode, actually, because it is one of the worst, out of all the seasons so far, it's the most poorly written, poorly directed shot they ever had. They go right from Ramsay and his men and the Hounds and Yasha and whatever left of her men.
Mm-hmm.
To like a shot where they're in the upstairs of the Dreadfort.
Right.
And the next thing you know, the very next shot is of Yasha going back to the boat saying, we're leaving. My brother's lost.
Oh, that's season 4 though. That's not this scene. But you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no. Never mind. No, well, I mean, you're totally right. That's why I was like, why is this one so bad? But you're right. You're right.
So this is when she goes.
But this is when she's like, I'm going to go save him. And then
that's actually a good scene then because I like the music.
Right.
The music there is awesome. Ramin Djawadi really puts on the music. I love the Ironborn music. And right there, I'm going to go to the Dreadfort and I'm going
to
save my brother. I do like
that. Yeah, you get psyched with
that. I won't take that back.
Stannis and Melisandre ask that. Oh, Davos frees Gendry. Stannis and Melisandre ask him if he freed Gendry. He says he does. He did. Stannis orders him to be executed, but Davos tells Stannis that he will need his help. Whatever. Everybody chants Mysa.
Correction, people. That is my least favorite scene in this episode.
Yeah.
I just always had a problem with that ending. I never liked it. I just... Another Dany ending. I don't know. I just...
I'm going to go 6.75.
I'm out there, agree. Top scene was the beginning scene with Roose Bolton going up.
Yeah. And worst scene, I mean, I can't say it's the Daenerys scene. I probably got to go with the Stannis scene because it's just not Stannis. So, John, I think this is worse than season 2. I have a feeling.
It is. It definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. Average is out to a 6.75. Season 2 had a 7.0.
I didn't write down my average for season 2, so I just want to...
You were a little higher than me with season 2.
It's just another example of their... Too scared of the audience forgetting these characters that they're trying to fit everybody into every episode, and it can't possibly work. What was your average for season 2?
It was 7.0 something.
That's 7.2 for that.
Your total was a 6.875. Barely percentage points.
6.75?
Yours is 6.875.
Oh.
Yeah, just...
Listen, I think...
I think we mentioned before, just... Writing a lot of useless stuff in there just to get to the big episode.
Okay.
I think we punished Blackwater a little bit quicker too, I think.
Yeah, Blackwater
would be a I can't give that a 9 or even a 9.25 or
anything. Reigns of Casterly is better than Blackwater.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have more characters. It's not just the
more Lannisters. Happens.
Right. And as you said before, it is a good go though, because you do have Danny getting control of Second Sons. You do have John fleeing from the Wildlings, killing some people, the direwolves, you know, bringing in the direwolves to help out John. So you thought, oh, this is great. Come crash right down on you.
But you love it because you're highly invested in these.
Right.
It reminds me a lot of George R. R. Martin and the problems he had with Dance of Dragons. Trying to get all these characters from point A to point B, keeping them all moving at the same time while trying to get to point B. So while Daenerys doesn't seem like she gets anywhere, she can't until she gets where she gets at the end, because you need Tyrion to get to over here. And what happens is you have a lot of what you have in season 3, plotting, really slow narrative development you're waiting for all these other characters to get a certain point.
Finger at Sansa, blah blah blah. Right.
So you end up with filler, and you end up with just
Covenant time.
Right. It doesn't have to be done that way. Again, I think the big problem here is not respecting the audience and thinking that we're not going to remember who Theon is. You don't need Theon in season 3. Period.
Actually, could have put him just out of the blue in episode 10.
Right.
And just like seeing the guy being like, you know, beating up and like, who's that? And all of a sudden you see it's Theon. Like, oh my God.
You don't think that's going to work? Look at what's happened with Rhaegar in season 6. Like, just have HBO put out some graphic. People forgot who Rhaegar was. Casual fans who watch the series once when it's on the air. But then they remember it. They read the HBO graphic and they realize. Even though Rhaegar's been talked about. So even if people forget who Theon is after 9 episodes, make them remember. Put him previously on. It's like with Benjen. We know who Benjen was. We haven't seen him in years. We know who Benjen is. Everybody knew who
Benjen was. We've seen my Uncle Benjen.
If you don't respect your audience, this is what you end up with. Thinking you have to hold their hand and walk them along. They're like, all right, this is what Arya's doing, and this is what Tyrion's doing, and this is what Cersei's doing, and they don't want to marry who they're supposed to marry, so they're going to have some back. Okay, yeah, all right. Challenge my brain. Make me think. Show me something that happens. Show me some development.
I agree with you. However, I can't say maybe they're all at fault for thinking the way they think.
No.
Because you do talk to the TV show people that I talk to, I do have to explain a lot. Like, I have to, like, you don't remember that? Like, they do forget. So maybe in their own defense, because of that, it is weakened. Because they actually are maybe someone writing that, because some of the audience just cannot remember.
But they can't remember anyway, and they're doing this. So why? I bet you it'd be easier to remember if you just did, almost treated it like an anthology show. Like, why not just do, and we talked about this for season 2. Just do all the Arya stuff in 2 episodes and have that with Jon. So maybe the 3rd episode and the 7th episode, Arya and Jon and their journeys. You'd cover more than what you covered with them anyway all season, and you don't have to juggle it every episode finding time for them. But they kept going back to what worked in season 1, which was following every single character. Season 1, you don't have as many characters to follow.
Nor environments and...
No, and you have Sean Bean, and you have Mark Addy, and you have... Viserys, these people that have a lot of gravity, these not quite master actors, but they hold the show together, and it can center around them. Because we know who Sean Bean is. We know who Mark Addy is. We know these characters. We know them. So we can watch a story unfold around them because of how it relates to them. And when you pull them out, it gets tougher, because then it's these minor characters that have become the major characters, but there's also a lot more minor characters coming up behind them.
Mm-hmm.
It does get confusing. It does, but they kept trying to operate it as though they were writing that first season, which works wonderfully, so I don't blame them for trying to do that. But with season 2, you had a scene that didn't work, and season 3, you should have challenged yourself more. John's whole journey in season 3, 3 episodes, 2 episodes with extra John. I do believe season 4, we start to get some changes. With Reigns of Casterly, with Robb Stark and Catelyn being eliminated from the narrative, it gets easier for them to tell a story, because they also stray further from what they're adapting. Now they're just hitting broad strokes instead of adapting an entire book. It's just points that they have to hit. And Benioff and Weiss, as we saw from season 6, they've worked a lot better in that kind of situation where they just have to hit certain points, and how they get there is up to them. They love this material. They love this world. 4, 5, and 6 seem like night and day to 1, 2, and 3. As much as I love season 1, 2 and 3 kind of
really drag it down. Production is so much better, and it means they made it more money. They can spend some more time on all that stuff.
Now, that being said, after how bad we thought season 2 was, why do you think season 3 worked for the average audience? Is it just Reigns of Castamere? No, because Daenerys had a few scenes in there that
I just really talked about with the dragons.
Yeah,
I think this all goes back to what we discussed before. I just think the show's just getting popular.
Yeah,
you know, it's
an event television, right. And something did for the most part. Right. Each week, something happened. We were like, was whoa. Not every week, but I'd say seven out of ten episodes, something happened. We were like, holy shit, did you see that? Whether it be Jaime losing his hand, whether it be Jakari's, whether it be obviously the Reigns of Castamere, you know, the insurrection at Craster's Keep, Sam killing a White Walker. Something really cool happened. There was a hook in each episode, which is better than season 2 already, even though
we marked
voted
it
lower.
We marked it lower.
Yeah.
I just have to think when we get to season 4, we'll get better scores, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to getting to season 4, because season 2 and season 3 are not, they're not what I remember. And I should have listened to you, because you said that season 3 was not, it wasn't that great.
And I thought I you know what, I even thought on the rewatch, I thought I didn't, actually, in all honesty, I thought I did enjoy the episodes better. I did like them better. So maybe, if I didn't rewatch them, maybe my scores would even be lower. But just a lot of, you know, moping around, storylines, and just really just predictable, you know, like Baelish and Marys, a lot of that stuff just became, season 3 just really became predictable.
Yeah.
Their characters.
Right.
At all. You knew what their game plan was. You knew they're not. They're serving their own interests. You know what? There's just not a lot of overall really good episodes to wash away some of the bad.
I would have thought for sure that season 3 would have been higher than season 2. That's just totally not. Maybe we went too easy on season 2. you know?
But we have to do a revamp, rewatch.
Redo a rewatch. We'll be back to you next week. Redo season 2. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening. We'll speak with you next week concerning the characters of season 3. And we'll be back at you really soon after that with season 4. And we're just rolling right along. And I'm excited to finish, because as soon as we're finished, that means we're on season 7, baby. And I can't wait for season 7. I really can't.
You know what I can't wait for? I just cannot wait for the soundtrack.
Well, I mean, I can't wait for the soundtrack, but I also can't wait for the show. I mean,
again, I've said it, we talked about season 6 and the soundtrack there. It's very interesting to see this season with Ron Raymond, what he does with, like, John's soundtrack.
Right.
Do we hear some more Targaryen fire and blood?
Right.
Any kind of cues to any kind of music we've heard with Danny before? Does he come up with something completely new and different? New, like, Stark Targaryen thing?
Track record says yes, he will.
I'm sure he's got to be excited at it.
We'll discuss it further. Please, leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you find us. Leave a review, because if you don't, other people won't find us. And we need other people to find us so that one day we can quit our jobs and just make a living doing podcasting. We'll talk with you guys next week. Bum 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 b